Chapter 12, The Appreciation Button. The appreciation button gets pushed when a parent who most likely felt unappreciated as a child goes out of his way for his children but gets no show of gratitude in return. He's asking his children to give him the appreciation he longed for. But in fact, he often ends up passing on the legacy when he expects the same gratitude demanded by his parents. The old story, "I had to walk 10 miles to school barefoot," is a good illustration of this button. You should appreciate how good you have it. This parent's need for appreciation blinds him to the fact that his children should not be obliged to show their appreciation for something that he missed out on many years back. The parent who demands appreciation is usually overcompensating for his past by giving all that he wished for to his children. Often his child doesn't want it, certainly didn't ask for it, and now is being expected to be grateful for it. The agenda is clearly the parent's. He expects his child to know how lucky she is. But his child has nothing to compare her own experience to and is left feeling unfairly blamed. When the appreciation button goes off, the parent feels resentful and taken for granted. Children of appreciation-seeking parents feel confused and misunderstood. They know they're expected to be something they're not and think it's unfair to have to be grateful for something they have come to expect. By pushing the appreciation button, the child is saying, "Your life was then, this is now. Let me live my life, not yours. I'll give you everything I never had, and you'd better be grateful." Greta and Chloe, age 11. When she had Chloe, all Greta ever wanted was to give her daughter everything, a beautiful room, beautiful clothes, a chance to be one of those girls who has what it takes to be somebody in school, to be accepted, approved of, even admired and emulated. Everything Greta always wanted. As Chloe grew, Greta was well aware of the dangers of projecting her own desires and dreams onto her child, or so she thought. It became apparent that Chloe had a mind of her own and different ideas about things. Greta adapted. Chloe was chunkier, more tomboyish, more willful, and more stubborn than the delicate, amiable little girl she had planned on having. Chloe was given everything. The play kitchen Greta always wanted, a tricycle with Minnie Mouse pedaling on mini pedals on the handlebars, an electrified dollhouse with every accessory stores had to offer. The bins of perfect toys were scrupulously maintained by Greta so there was never a missing piece. Chloe would have it all when she played. Christmas always had a theme, like the costume Christmas, when Greta hung beautiful new dress-up costumes across the living room on red cord with green clothespins. When Chloe's face lit up Christmas morning as she walked into Greta's dream, Greta felt triumphant. She thought she had become the mother she always wanted. Christmas for Greta and her younger brother had been socks, pajamas, and a couple of dime store toys. It wasn't that her parents couldn't afford more. Greta's mother, Lillian, was an accomplished pianist who wrote popular children's piano instruction books. She was quite the grande dame, as Greta described, but her money and accomplishments didn't make her generous. When her mother took her piano students out for ice cream, Greta was instructed to say she didn't want any. From the age of 5, she was left alone much of the time. When she was 7, she was in charge of caring for her younger brother as well. Greta's father committed suicide when she was 13. Her fall and winter clothes were purchased every August when they went to the dime store. Lillian picked out 5 fabrics that Greta had no part in choosing and then visited the seamstress, who outfitted her in 2-piece pleated skirt and tuck-in blouse sets. "There," her mother would say, "there's plenty of clothes for Monday through Friday for the year. 2-piece outfits are handy, so you won't grow out of them." Every time her mother dropped her off at school, Greta was expected to say thank you very much. If she forgot, Lillian would honk the horn and glare at Greta. "I was expected to be appreciative of every morsel that came my way and to dote on my mother," exclaimed Greta resentfully. "I did a remarkably good job." So Greta put all her hopes and dreams into tiny, unsuspecting Chloe. The only problem was that the mother Greta always wanted wasn't the mother Chloe needed. Chloe was growing up in a middle-class community where her riches were ostentatious. She was embarrassed by them, And as much as Greta longed to get away from her mother's influence, as much as Greta longed to get away from her mother's influence, Lillian continued to control Greta by criticizing Chloe and the lavish gifts and opportunities Greta provided for her. "She's a spoiled brat. She's rude and selfish. You ought to be beating the hell out of her," was Lillian's familiar remark when her granddaughter did not show her the love and politeness Lillian expected. For a while, Greta focused on trying to be a good mother. "But soon," she confessed in class, "a rage has begun to build inside me like some volcanic boil. I realized it's because Chloe doesn't appreciate anything I do for her. She has everything I never had. She doesn't get how hard it could be for her in a different life." When Chloe needed art supplies for a school project, Greta took her to the store, where she all but called the store manager in an outrage because the boxes of 24 colored pencils were gone. "But, Mom, the teacher said a box of 6, Chloe complained, embarrassed by her mother's anger. "But wouldn't you rather have 24 and be able to choose from all those colors?" Greta sounded just like the little girl who had wanted all those colors so badly, who had wanted her mother to insist on the biggest box. But Chloe didn't want the biggest box. Greta described a recent scene to the class. The other night, before a project was due, Chloe, of course, had something else she had to do. "So I cut and pasted and colored a map of the European countries long after Chloe went to bed. Then I left the finished gem outside Chloe's door to be found in the morning. I assumed Chloe would be surprised and thrilled with it, and with me. Not even a thank you. In the hustle and chaos of the morning, it was loaded carelessly into the car along with her backpack and books. I could feel the rage building inside me, but I kept a lid on it until the car door slammed behind Chloe as she ran off toward the school building. Nothing had been said about it. That was it. My button exploded. I got out of the car and screamed across the playground at Chloe. 'You are the most selfish and unappreciative child in this school. You have the heart the size of a green pea and the sensitivity of an ice cube.' Chloe ignored me and slinked into the building, I'm sure hoping that no one connected her with this maniac of a mother. I got back in my car and cried. 'Imagine if your mother had done something like that for you,' I said. Greta, a bit choked up, said sadly, 'I can't imagine it.' 'You expected the appreciation you know you would have felt. You were doing for Chloe what you could only have dreamed of. But if you had had a caring mother, you probably wouldn't have wanted her doing your projects for you either.' Greta looked up. 'Huh, I hadn't thought that far. Chloe has come to expect your indulgence. No reason for her to be grateful for it. You were satisfying you, not her. Maybe she gets that and is trying to make you get it by not responding. Her appreciation would keep you doing it.' 'Of course that's right. I never saw it that way before,' Greta said pensively. Greta learned from her mother, 'I am worth nothing.' This belief led her to establish a reactive standard, 'I will give my child everything I never got, and I will finally be appreciated and be something.' But the frustration that neither her mother nor her daughter appreciate her, no matter what she does, leads her to rage. Her emotions cause her to automatically react in the same way her mother did. Greta compensated for what she never received with grandiose parenting, never suspecting that she was asking Chloe to heal her wounds by giving her the appreciation she always needed. She was caught up in her own agenda of filling the role of best possible mother and couldn't see that her daughter had come to resent the lavishness because of the strings attached. When Greta can focus on what Chloe needs from her, rather than on what Greta fantasizes, she will be giving Chloe the kind of attention she needed from her mother. In doing that, Greta will begin to fill the void left from the lack of attention that Lillian was unable to give. 'Who do you think I am, anyway?' Charlotte and Lauren, age 13. During the first session of a buttons class, Charlotte piped up after hearing my introduction of what it means to get our buttons pushed. 'Boy, do I have a good example of that,' she exclaimed. For almost 2 years, Charlotte had battled with her daughter Lauren over laundry. Charlotte would bring a basket of clean, folded laundry to her daughter's room. Lauren would leave the clean clothes in the basket, and throughout the week, she would throw her dirty clothes on top of them. "It totally pushed my button," Charlotte said. "I tried telling myself that the stupid laundry should not be such a big deal." All her friends, even her own mother, wondered why she got so upset over such a little thing. But Charlotte couldn't stop herself from yelling at her daughter time and time again. "What do I have to do to get you to put your clean clothes away? Why can't you do this one stupid little thing? Who do you think I am, anyway, your maid? I go to all this trouble for you, do your laundry, fold it even, and what do you do for me?" Lauren would either ignore her or say, "I don't care about it. Leave me alone." I actually decided I was going nuts to make such a huge issue out of the laundry, but it was on my mind constantly. Every time I walked by her room, I would make some kind of sarcastic or mean crack. Charlotte smiled and shook her head at the memory. When I asked Charlotte what it was like for her growing up, she told us that she's the youngest but only girl of 6 children. Her job throughout her childhood was to take care of many of the chores around the house, one of them being the laundry for all her siblings. It was the girl's job. Her brothers had more manly chores. She vowed that her children would not be the servant she had been. So in her present family, she has never been strict about assigning chores. I just ask at the time for someone to help me with the dishes or cleaning the house or whatever, and the kids usually chip in with little or no problem, she said. But putting away the laundry was a different story. Laundry had been Charlotte's most hated chore growing up. Her brothers were slobs and left their dirty socks and underwear everywhere. She would complain to no avail. She grew to hate her brothers, as they would mock her when she yelled at them to pick up their dirty clothes. Her mother was a distant autocrat, depressed most of the time and often belligerent when the house was not kept in order. Charlotte knew there was no support from her mother in getting her brother's cooperation, so she resentfully picked up their messes and put their clean clothes away. Charlotte didn't want her daughter to suffer the same degradation. She didn't even require her to do her own laundry. But when Lauren refused to even take her clean clothes out of the basket and put them away, Charlotte exploded. Exaggerated fears of what a slob her daughter was and that her life would always be a mess because she would never be able to organize anything flew through her mind. Charlotte wanted the appreciation she never got from her mother or brothers, and deep down she was resentful that her daughter was getting away with not doing what she had to do. Lauren had been let off the hook that had dragged Charlotte down for so many years, and she can't even put away her damn clothes. What kind of respect is that? Charlotte remembered thinking. One evening, when Charlotte went into Lauren's room to get her dirty laundry, she noticed the neatly stacked clean clothes underneath the dirty ones. This time she really lost it. "Who do you think I am, anyway, your servant? Do you expect me to put them away for you, too?" she screamed. Lauren looked up at her mother, rolled her eyes, said, "Looks that way," and went back to her book. Charlotte's rage was rooted in the conflict between her present standard, children should not be servants in their own home, and her belief, children are servants in their own home. This conflict fueled her assumptions. "She doesn't appreciate what I do for her. She's a slob and will never be able to organize her things." Most likely, if Charlotte had had the tools presented here to discover this conflict between her past beliefs and present standards, her torture over this issue might have ended sooner. Finally, exhaustion and surrender led Charlotte to a happy ending. One day, after almost 2 years of this battle, Charlotte sat down in Lauren's room, spent and somehow detached. She said calmly, drained of anger or blame, "Okay. What do I do about this clothes thing? I give up." Her daughter, released from having to be defensive against her mother's rage, said, "Mom, I don't have any room in my bureau for any more clothes." Charlotte admitted that she even knew that, but her irrational assumptions of her daughter's incompetence, disorganization, and lack of gratitude had far overshadowed the facts. She finally detached enough to hear the simple truth that overcrowded bureau drawers was the root of the problem all along. On the spot, Charlotte and Lauren made a plan. Charlotte took a couple of days off from work, and she and her daughter spent Thursday through Sunday of school vacation week going through everything in Lauren's room. At the bottom of her drawers were little girls' clothes that she hadn't worn for over 5 years. Outdated clothes and recyclables were put in a bag for Goodwill. They made piles and more piles, and by the end of the 4 days, not only were the drawers half empty, but the room was rearranged. Together, they went through catalogs and ordered new school clothes. They listened to music, reminisced over each piece of clothing, and laughed till their stomachs hurt. Charlotte claimed it was the best time they had ever had with each other. Her only regret was that it took her almost 2 years to get there. If Charlotte had been able to clarify the fact that she was resentful of her daughter because Lauren didn't have to do something she was never asked to do in the first place, she would have seen the deeper roots of her anger. But all she could dig up was the fact that laundry had always been an issue for her. It took complete surrender and detachment from her emotions for Charlotte to give up her fight and look for the reason beneath her daughter's behavior. When Lauren did not feel blamed, she could express that reason. "You don't appreciate me." Paula and Tess, age 9, Maggie, 7, and Beth, 3. The morning of the 2-hour snow delay, Paula's 3 girls were ecstatic. They had been rushed as usual to get ready for school, and now they had an extra 2 precious hours to play. Beth was thrilled to have her 2 sisters home for a while longer. Paula was not so happy. The snow was deep, the driveway had to be shoveled, and her husband was already at work. Maggie pleaded with her mother for a special favor to watch a video, something they only got to do on weekends. Tess had put Maggie up to the task and was eavesdropping from the other room. She knew her mother would be against the idea and didn't want to be the one yelled at. Paula had wanted them to read or color quietly, but she was impressed with Maggie's argument. "We've had our breakfast, brushed our teeth, put our breakfast dishes in the dishwasher, and have our backpacks ready to go. And we did it all very cooperatively, didn't we?" Maggie had bartered well for her age, Paula thought. It was all true. She couldn't argue with it. She agreed, knowing that she had to shovel the driveway and that watching a video would keep them quiet. Paula believed that a good argument presented with strong convictions should be encouraged in her family of all girls. She had never been given this opportunity in her childhood. In fact, her mother and father had squelched any convictions she ever had. She was determined that no daughter of hers was ever going to believe she was incapable of doing what she wanted. Feeling proud that she had just honored her daughter by acknowledging her debating skill, something she herself had always wished for, Paula put on her boots and went out to tackle the driveway. It took her an hour and a half to finish. She came in to gather the girls for the drive to school. Expecting to tell them they would have to finish the movie Friday night, she was startled to see they were nowhere in sight. What was in sight was a huge mess. The couch cushions were scattered around the living room floor. Toys were everywhere. Juice boxes had left sticky puddles on her favorite table, and her best teacups were lined up on the floor. Her button went off. She was in shock as she heard herself screaming at her daughters, "You ungrateful brats! Here I am out there working, letting you do what you wanted, and this is the thanks I get? We're not going anywhere until every bit of this is picked up and put back together again, and there will be no more movies for a month." The girls slinked down the stairs with heads hung low. Paula barked, "Hurry up! I don't have all day, you know." They set to work to put the living room in order. When Paula saw the looks on their faces, the avoidance of eye contact from all of them, she realized she had shamed them into good behavior. She was appalled by her outburst, but felt justified in her anger. She was confused about what to do. Guilt and anger merged, and once again she tallied another mark on her long list of parenting failures. Paula shared in class that the first 2 assumptions that popped into her head were, "My children are ingrates," and "They are unappreciative of my liberated parenting." "I expected them to be grateful and to show their appreciation for my gracious gift with impeccable behavior. I wanted a pat on the back for not bringing them up under the same restrictions I had, and to be assured that my progressive parenting worked." She laughed after she said this. "Huh, I guess I'm asking them for that pat on the back, but I still think their behavior was out of line." Paula recognized that she had two strong beliefs from her childhood. I must be grateful, and I am never good enough. When I asked her where she had learned them, she said without hesitation, from her father. He always wanted things his way, she told us. He was always right, never wrong. He never apologized for anything in his life. No one crossed him. We all learned to appease him for fear his wrath might suddenly erupt. Arguments with him were never won, and so were rarely entered into. I was the good and dutiful child, but still, I wasn't good enough. She recalled a time as a teenager when she had borrowed the family car shortly before her parents were leaving on a trip. She was rushing to get her errand done to get back in plenty of time. As she was on her way home, she noticed the gas tank was close to empty. She wondered whether her father would be more pleased if she got home ahead of time or if she filled the tank. Risking being a couple minutes late, she decided on the latter. After all, they would have to stop for gas if she didn't. She raced home, realizing she was golden. Not only had she filled the tank, but she would be back in plenty of time for their departure. However, when she proudly told her father that she had filled the tank for him, he criticized her for not recording the mileage. As she shared this story, her eyes widened as she recognized the fact that she had not been appreciated for her thoughtfulness. She got it. She exclaimed, "So my anger at my girls comes from thinking that I'm still not being appreciated for what I do. My belief is that I'm not good enough or worthy of appreciation." She had hit the nail on the head, but then her expression dropped as she said, "Well, that's stupid. I can understand feeling that way as a child, but as an adult, I know I shouldn't expect my children to tell me or show me how much they appreciate me all the time." It's amazing how that stuff stays in there from childhood. She went home that day, gathered the girls together, reminded them of the snow day, and told them how much she appreciated their speedy cooperation in getting the living room back in order. She apologized for her reaction. She then asked them to take responsibility for their part. They apologized and said they had decided not to use up their precious time cleaning up their toys. Paula acknowledged their desire to play, but asked them to go back over the situation and come up with a better solution. They agreed together that they should have just gone upstairs to play when they were bored with the movie, rather than getting out all the toys. And they agreed never to use her teacups for play again. Paula taught her girls that her rage was her problem. They did not have to take responsibility for their mother's feelings, as she had done with her father. But they did have to take responsibility for their behavior.